Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about grizzly bears, last week's GOP gubernatorial debate, and the Little Shell Tribe's celebration of their recent federal recognition. It's Monday, January 27th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Grizzly bears that make their way into the Bitterroot ecosystem will have Endangered Species Act protections. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officials made that announcement in a letter to national forests in the area last week. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
The statement clarifies a long-standing question mark over the status of grizzlies in the Bitterroots. The area is currently considered unoccupied, but is key for connectivity between Yellowstone and Glacier area bears. A Clinton-era plan would have reintroduced an experimental and non-essential population of grizzlies there. That plan was scrapped in 2001. But until this week, the legal status and protections of grizzlies in the area were never formalized. Mike Bader, a consultant with the Flathead Lolo Bitterroot Citizen Task Force, says it's a wake-up call to the Forest Service.
The management and the protection is going to have to adapt to catch up with the bears.
In a written statement, a spokesperson for the Forest Service said the letter provides clarity on the legal status of grizzlies in the Bitterroots and will inform future consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Gary McFarland of Friends of the Clearwater says it's a step in the right direction, especially as the Nez Perce Clearwater moves forward with its draft forest plan, which was released in December.
It is putting them on notice that they need to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and eventually they have to provide protection for grizzlies, and this forest plan doesn't do any of that.
Public comment on the Nez Perce Clearwater plan goes until March 19th. Forest plan revisions for the Lolo and Bitterroot National Forests are also underway. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
U.S. land managers say they will release by mid-March a priority list of federal lands that need but don't have public access. U.S. Bureau of Land Management officials want people to nominate lands where the public could legally hunt, fish, or pursue other recreational purposes, except the lands have no or limited access. The agency manages 383,000 square miles of land, primarily in western states. A representative of the National Wildlife Federation says the public access initiative is laudable, but must be considered in the context of Trump's broad rollbacks of environmental rules. Montana officials are worried that the sale of hundreds of thousands of acres of timberlands may eventually close off the public access that previous owners have allowed. The buyer has assured officials that no changes to long-standing practices are planned for recreational access. Washington-based timber giant Weyerhaeuser is selling its 630,000 acres in Montana to Georgia-based Southern Pine Plantations for $145 million. The deal is expected to be closed later this year. Weyerhaeuser has an agreement with the state that allows hunters and other recreationists to access the private land in exchange for state game wardens patrolling the property. The three candidates in the Republican primary race for governor in Montana squared off at their first full debate last week. Kayla DeRoche reports each candidate tried to distinguish himself as the best Montanan to advocate for other Montanans.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Yellowstone County Republican Central Committee.
About 400 people showed up to hear U.S. Congressman Greg Gianforte, State Attorney General Tim Fox, and State Senator Al Olszewski at the Billings Hotel and Convention Center Thursday, hosted by the Yellowstone County Republicans. While candidates remained relatively noncombative, Senator Olszewski of Kalispell fit in an early jab at Gianforte.
I will not be bullied, bought, or body slammed out of this race. Montana deserves a governor that's a fighter, and I'm the man for that job.
Olszewski's opening statement remark referenced Gianforte's physical assault on a reporter in 2017. In his opening statement, Gianforte came back with a line coined by California Republican Party Chairman Gaylord Parkinson in the 1960s, often attributed to Ronald Reagan.
Now, when I started this race, I made a personal commitment that I would abide by Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment. He was very clear. He said, "Thou shall not speak ill of another Republican." That's a personal commitment I made to my friends, Al and Tim, and it's a personal commitment I make to you throughout the remainder of this race.
He said the candidates need to be unified to bring an end to the Democratic Party's stint in the governor's office. Montana's last Republican governor was Judy Martz, who held the seat for a single term between 2001 and 2005. Attorney General Tim Fox also emphasized the importance of a Republican winning the governor's seat in his opening statement.
We need to find the principled person, the principled conservative, and someone with character, integrity to get these things done. I have been that person for you as your attorney general. I have stood up to federal overreach. I've protected the unborn, and I've defended our Second Amendment rights.
All three candidates praised President Donald Trump's resource extraction, environmental, and economic policies. Gianforte said he could use his relationship with Trump and other D.C. connections to benefit Montana. He also touted his business experience and elaborated on how he could use that to improve the state economy.
If we just hold the line on spending, we can use the surplus that will result to lower property taxes and income taxes.
He did not explicitly state how he would avoid raising state spending. While each candidate made promises about how they'd act as the state's top executive, they focused on big-picture approaches instead of specifics. Gianforte said the state should increase accountability for state agencies and the school system and reform the state's financial structure so that Montana could direct those funds to where it matters, like to raising teacher salaries. He also voiced support for simplifying environmental regulations, which he called convoluted and limiting on potential resource extraction. Olszewski, too, referenced extraction as an industry the state should take more advantage of.
This is the treasure state, not the tourist state. And we need to work and go maximum with making sure that we take our natural resources, the two richest copper deposits in the world, and bring high-paying jobs by extracting those riches.
Olszewski also suggested giving people who don't qualify for Medicaid 30 days to switch out from coverage and putting a bounty out for drug traffickers. Olszewski's two rivals expressed support of a bill he sponsored, which Governor Steve Bullock vetoed last year. The language in the Montana Born Alive Infant Protection Act requires that doctors should attempt to save the life of a baby following an abortion. Fox focused on the programs he pushed through as attorney general, like a human trafficking task force and a statewide initiative to fight substance abuse. He also brought up his experience making economic change and said as attorney general, he's had experience cutting costs.
The real way that we can cut taxes is by jumpstarting our economy and making sure that we have an economy that creates jobs. Then, frankly, the revenues aren't much of a problem.
After an hour and a half, the debate wrapped up. In the lobby, candidates' posters covered the walls and people in red manned tables with merchandise and hats that said things like Trumptana. Sherry Caverly said she had fun and liked that the candidates stayed on topic.
They all answered very good in the same way, saying the same thing, which was really kind of nice. And the thing is, they all have very good experience being in the government, each one of them. So that was nice. That's also a nice thing. It'll make it hard for people to decide, I think.
She said she is voting for Al Olszewski, who strikes her as genuine and real. But she's glad all candidates touched on pro-life issues and the problem of missing and murdered indigenous people. Gail Lammers, who's from the same community Fox was born in, Hardin, also said he was glad the candidates addressed the issue of missing and murdered indigenous people.
They all did very good. If I had to choose a winner, I would say Tim probably took it. You know, Tim Fox, the attorney general. You know, I am a little biased because I'm from Hardin. But, you know, I think, honestly, he had the most confidence and did the best job, you know.
This was the first time all three Republican candidates met in debate. The Democratic primary race includes three contenders, Lieutenant Governor Mike Cooney, businesswoman Whitney Williams, and State House Minority Leader Casey Schreiner. The primary election is June 2nd. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
The Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Indians celebrated the tribe's recently won federal recognition in Great Falls this weekend. Olivia Reingold reports.
Make a hole.
Hundreds, maybe thousands of people are crammed into a narrow hallway waiting to be seated for a celebratory dinner at a Great Falls Convention Center. People are embracing, talking to their neighbors in line.
I see you have a Métis sash on.
Little girls in powwow dresses are stomping on the carpet floor, warming up for the dance later that night. caterers with stacks of dishes in their hands are trying to clear a path through the crowd.
Excuse me, everybody, I gotta come through!
Inside, Little Shell Tribal Chairman Gerald Gray stands at a podium in the center of a crowded room.
So I'd like to welcome everybody today to this historic event.
Men take their cowboy hats off and place them over their hearts. Babies bounce on their mother's laps. None of them are crying. Every other person holds up their smartphone to videotape his speech.
Tonight, we commemorate an effort that no tribe should ever have to go through.
The Little Shell first pushed for federal recognition during treaty talks over 100 years ago. Without it, the tribe wasn't recognized as a sovereign nation or eligible for federal dollars. Now the tribe is guaranteed a land base within these Montana counties: Blaine, Cascade, Glacier, and Hill, and federal resources from agencies like the Bureaus of Indian Affairs and Indian Education. That's after the tribe gained federal recognition through the National Defense Bill last month.
We also now have to think of our future generations and build a strong nation for them, a nation that provides jobs, education, elder, veteran services, a nation that is healthy and economically self-sufficient.
Gray says the Indian Health Service has agreed to provide health care for tribal members at existing facilities once the tribe provides its enrollment files.
It's number one, that we need to provide access to health care for our members.
He says it's his priority for the tribe's 5,500 members.
Hi, I'm wondering if I could speak with you.
Josh Claus is an attorney for the tribe and says he'll work with Gray to help get the tribe federal benefits over the coming months. He's represented tribal nations for over a decade, but says this is the only time he's worked with a tribe that's become federally recognized.
It's incredibly rare. Two Congresses ago, six tribes in Virginia received federal recognition through an act of Congress. But prior to that, it had been 2001.
Claus says when he first started lobbying for Little Shell federal recognition, his peers on Capitol Hill thought it was a lost cause. Downstairs, fiddle music is bumping. The tribe is known for their jig dancing. Sisters Randy and Julie Painter are sitting down at a dinner table, digesting the speeches they just heard from politicians like Montana Governor Steve Bullock and tribal leaders from around the state. Randy, who flew in from Northern California, says this day is about validation.
This isn't about casinos. Great Falls doesn't need another casino. This isn't about what we're going to get. The entire thing is about identity, and it's so valuable, and I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Her sister Julie, who flew in from Salt Lake City, chimes in.
Yeah, so I've often thought about this in my identity, being Native or mixed race background, and not really having that card or the official label to say, oh, this is part of who you are as a person.
She says that's made it hard to feel like she belongs, like she's a true Native American. But not tonight. Randy says she sees family when she looks around. Literally. She says they all look related.
There was a lady that came up to me and said, oh, Lisa. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not Lisa. And she said, oh, you look just like her from the side.
The Little Shell lost their ancestral homelands in North Dakota in 1892, when Chief Little Shell rejected a low offer for his tribe's land. According to documents submitted to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the government removed tribal members from their lands and enrollment lists. Descendants later clustered in communities on the outskirts of Great Falls, Helena, and along the High Line. Family is on the painters' minds tonight. The sisters say the tribe is poised to receive things that would have meant a lot to their deceased family members.
The most powerful thing, and it's somewhat bittersweet, is that the access to health care could have been life-changing for my grandparents, who all suffered from diabetes, and there was some, you know, intergenerational issues that came up from being that Native identity.
The sisters say they had to leave Montana to find things like health care, jobs, and college educations. They say if the tribe had been federally recognized, there's a good chance the resources would have allowed them to stay. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold in Great Falls.
Olivia Reingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America Corps member. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.